Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Welcome to episode 101 of The Payoff. And Jeff, we have a tribute of sorts to Mr. Del Wilkes, who was kind enough to join us as a guest. You've already heard him on a previous episode. This was another match that we discussed and talked with him about. And so we wanted to air it. Obviously, we just lost him recently. Heart attack, still a relatively young man. It was very sad to hear. But we're excited to bring you this interview and share a little bit more about his life and his career. Really just such a nice guy. And really, Jeff, we were both sad to hear the news.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, like you said, like really somber kind of recording this one. You know, normally we're more upbeat about this type of thing, but why we're doing this one, it's one of those where we actually did have another episode slated, and then after unfortunate passing, we said no, we've got this, let's talk about this, let's put something out there, and really a tribute for him. And I'll just say on the front end here, like all the, you know, while he didn't have the biggest career, like all of the kind of, you know, what people were saying and like the tweets that were coming out for certain people, like it was almost like nobody disliked him. You know, it seems like he was extremely well respected amongst like all the other all the other wrestlers and things like that. You know, he's not going to get a 10 bell salute or anything like that, but like just how other people in the industry viewed him, you know, it's one of those like you wish we had known that before, because just so much respect outpouring for him after he passed away.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we're going to, obviously have a great interview. It was a fun match. The reason that, I wanted to talk to him about this match was because I was there. This was in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I know you're going to get into some of it, but I was really excited for that reason. So that's why we're covering this match. And actually, almost just a few weeks away from the anniversary of it, it'll have been 24 years. My, does time fly. So
yeah, crazy.
Yeah, Jeff, if you're ready, let's get into the build of this one.
Let's do this. Yeah.
Right. It's time for the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right. So like I said, we're in Pittsburgh at the Civic Arena. Your co-host Tom was there for this one. Bret Hart just cuts like a brutal promo on Pittsburgh and the United States. I mean, this is when, the heel Bret Hart was just hot as hell. I mean, this angle just could not have been better and hotter. You know, Jeff, as I was just pulling some notes together for this show, I was thinking about, how much fun it would have been to see where that angle would have gone, because mm-hmm. Obviously with the screw job and the WCW stuff, it just ended. And it was one of the hottest angles. I mean, could they have gone another year or 2 years with a heel Bret Hart in the US-Canada thing? I believe so. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would have been really, really interesting to see where it went. The angle was hot as hell. Bret was doing his best promos and in-ring work ever.
Coming off of Mania. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It was making bigger stars of Davey Boy and Owen. It would have been fun to see. So, that promo, I still remember that one. As far as this episode of Raw, July 28th, 1997, Legion of Doom defeated Los Barriquas by DQ. Triple H and Vader had a match that never got started. This was where Mankind was dressed as the cameraman. It was great. And he attacked Triple H before. Again, I still remember that one. The Truth Commission defeated Bob Holly, Flash Funk, and Jesse James. Quite the combination there. Crush and Farouk, double DQ. Godwins defeated Dude Love and Steve Austin, who are your tag team champions, by count out. Devin Storm defeated Ace Starling. Goldust and Rockabilly ended in a no contest. And then the main event was the Patriot and Bret Hart. Also, were treated to a dark match that night of your WWF champion, The Undertaker, defeating Bret Hart and Steve Austin in a triple threat. So, Jeff, as you could probably imagine, it's a pretty fun show to attend.
It started hot, especially with LOD and you in attendance, you know, at that point too. We do not have Devin Storm and Ace Darling on our list, but you know, overall, and that good dark match too. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you just think of like, and again, I know sometimes we probably remember the Attitude Era as being better than it was or perfect at all times, but like, think about this show. Okay, I go there. You've got this Patriot Bret Hart, you know, pretty interesting, as we'll get into, match. You know, you've got The Undertaker and Steve Austin, Goldust, you know, the Honky Tonk Man's managing Rockabilly, Love, Steve Austin in a tag match, right? Mankind attacking Triple H, Vader. I mean, the Legion of Doom. I mean, that's a hell of a lot for, you know, a show. And
yeah,
it's there was some star power there,
and a 2-hour show at that point too. It was not they weren't filling 3 hours back then.
Yeah, so I got some other stuff I'm going to share later, but from a storyline standpoint, Jeff, how do we get to this match on this show?
Yeah, and this was a big one. It was a big draw that night, everything like that. And so we hadn't talked about as much of this with the Patriot Del Wilkes, you know, when we first covered this match, practically 2 years ago at this point, or a follow-up match to this one. But it was 1994. You know, Wilkes was actually in WCW World Championship Wrestling. And he had a tag team with the one and only, also former guest of the show, Marcus Buff Bagwell, called Stars and Stripes. And so they feuded actually with Paul Orndorff, Paul Roma for the World Tag Team Championship at WCW. Really a lot of back and forth. They were tag team champs at Buff and Del twice over this kind of, you know, time, and back and forth and kind of past it and stuff like that. It was Fall Brawl 1994, actually winning Stars and Stripes beating them. It was called Pretty Wonderful back then, if you remember. And then kind of passing it back and forth, just losing it, like really, you know, from Fall Brawl to Halloween Havoc 94. Again, winning it at Clash of Champions. It'd be 29 in 1994. Like just, you know, a lot of really back and forth. Patriots mask was on the line during that one as well too. And so just really that, you know, into, you know, in 1994 into 1995, they were, I'd say, a fairly successful tag team. You know, passing the belts back and forth and kind of having those matches. And then he ended up leaving actually in 1995 WCW. Spent some time actually in All Japan Pro Wrestling. They had a tag team again, one like with the former Johnny Ace, Johnny Laurinaitis, and the two of them taking on different tag teams over there as well too, but losing that. And then a lot of us are familiar that watch New Japan and kind of have some of the tournaments and points. He was on a lot of the tournaments that they had, like in 1996, through most of 1996, kind of competing in the heavyweight battle royal, just a couple different things. The Champion Carnival was another one, him finishing, you know, a few points there.
And just tying in that, Jeff, the highest star rating for any of his matches was a tag match in 96. It was for All Japan, and it was, and I'm going to butcher this, this tag team partner of his, Manuka Mossman. They were against Dan Crawford and Doug Furness. So that was his highest rated match ever, but he was doing some really good stuff over there.
What was that rating?
It was a 3.75.
Okay. Yeah. And so, yeah, a lot of tag teams really through 1996 over in All Japan. And then actually forming a stable, big fan of stables here on the show with Kobayashi and Johnny Ace. It was Global Energetic Tough Get. And so GET. And so, yeah, it really, though, only a little bit. I say he was involved for a little bit of time because the group didn't really last. And then he left in 1997. So his really interesting. So in June of 1997, he had been wrestling over in All Japan. And then he really debuts on TV. He wrestled the dark match, actually beating Rockabilly, but then debuted on TV on July 14th, 1997. And so immediately getting dropped in. So really, like
two weeks prior to this. Yeah.
Yes. And so immediately, you know, starting to feud with Brett. And like Tom said, this was the Hart Foundation in 1997 that was hated by everyone. It was, this is Brett Owen, Bulldog, Pillman. This was Brett, like I said, post Mania, 13 in the match with Stone Cold, and just really immediately, the setup couldn't have been any more perfect, where you had, anti-American Brett and the Hart Foundation and more than pro-American, the Patriot coming in. So as Tom said, the promo that Brett cut, it was actually at the top of the show on this one. I'll refresh your memory on this one, Tom. I don't know if I'm sure you looked it up, but just to remember you. But the line he used, he said, the show opened with Bret Hart. Brett had his good ones and his bad ones, and this one was a great one. He said that if you wanted to give the U.S. an enema, you'd stick the hose right here in Pittsburgh. And so I'm not gonna lie, like, I know you're a hometown boy there, but that's a pretty good line,
dude. It was you couldn't have booed any louder. It was just, and those were those, those 97 like Raw crowds where there's a million signs, it's loud as hell. It was so good.
Well, and at the time here in 1997 as well, too. So he said that the Patriot debuted by coming out and standing next to Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels, and said that would be like Bill Clinton standing next to the Unabomber and Richard Simmons. And so at the time, obviously, it worked in the sense of kind of, what they're talking about and kind of what was happening and things like that. Yeah, it's just, it worked under the, it may not be able to get away with some of that stuff, nowadays, but it worked at the time. And so, but again, really extremely playing up the America or, anti-American, American angle, in a lot of ways too. I had put on here, like, this match really a stepping stone to what we'll talk about in the aftermath here. Like, we have talked about the match that comes after this one or this match, and a previous episode. Definitely go back and check that one out. But it doesn't mean that this match wasn't a good match by any means. Like, this is definitely one why we talked to him about it, and why it really, 2 weeks after he debuts, he's in the ring with, arguably one of the biggest heels ever, at the time. So, just a lot happening, but, good stuff. So, yeah. Your thoughts, Tom?
I mean, you're right. It kind of came out of nowhere, and it was great. It made perfect sense. So I loved it. I love the entire, everything about this. Again, it was just pulling this thing off where, you've got the heel in America, baby face everywhere else. You did the double turn with him in Austin. Just all of that was just, it's not easy to do. And not only did they pull it off, but it was incredible. I think because it ended so abruptly, I just don't think people understand how good this was. You know, because you had, remember, right around this time, you had the Calgary Stampede match, which was off the charts. You have Steve Austin gaining popularity and you know, becoming Stone Cold, one of, if not the biggest stars of all time. Yep. You know, just a really, really hot heel. Oh, by the way, Brett happens to be, you know, one of, if not the best in-ring workers, as well as this, you know, great heel character. You got Shawn Michaels floating around. You got The Undertaker floating around. Triple H is coming up. Mick Foley. I mean, The Rock's, you know, in this era too. I mean, it's just, it's wild, man. So yeah, really, really good stuff.
Absolutely. A lot happening.
All right. So if you want to watch this, it's season 5, episode 30 on Peacock. July 28th, 1997 Raw. It's at the very end of the show. We're going to start it early on at the entrances, and we watch it with Dell. So you got to watch this, man. It was a great, great show. Great, great match. So Jeff, are we ready?
I think I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right. Let's get into the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
All right, I've been looking forward to this one for a while. We are here with the Patriot, Del Wilkes. Del, I got to tell you, the reason I'm so excited about talking about this match from July 28, 1997, in the Igloo in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as 13-year-old Tom Healy was there to watch this one live. And, man, I hated Bret Hart. This angle was hot. And, man, was I excited to see you take it to him in this match. So, Let's talk about the Patriot gimmick here. Who came up with it, and how was it wearing a mask all those years?
Well, the people that came up with it were Joe Pedicino and his wife, Bonnie Blackstone. I was working for the AWA as the trooper, and of course they went under and went out of business. And so the Global Wrestling Federation ended up, it was a new company, the Global Wrestling Federation was, and they ended up with that same time spot on ESPN that the AWA had had, Monday through Friday from 4 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So they sent me a plane ticket to fly out to Dallas, Texas to do the very first global taping ever. And I took my trooper gear with me because I thought that's how they were going to use me. And we all stayed at the same hotel there. And literally early that day, I mean, we're going to go to the building and do our first TV taping that night. Earlier that day, Pedicino called me and asked me to walk over to his room where he and Bonnie were at. And Bill Eady was there. Bill was helping run things in Global. And Bonnie brought out a brown grocery bag, the old paper grocery bag. She unfolded it, and she pulled out this red, white, and blue mask, red, white, and blue tights, red, white, and blue trunks. And they laid out this character for me. We had been involved in Desert Storm, you know, when our military went into Kuwait to liberate Kuwait, where Iraq had invaded Kuwait. And patriotism was really at a fever pitch and at a high level. And they said, we think based on the political climate right now, it would be a great opportunity for a patriotic character. And we feel you're the guy that can pull it off. And that night, the Patriot walked down the aisle at the Sportatorium, the first time ever. And the crowd went crazy. And the rest is history. And I knew we were onto something good that night just by the crowd's response. And I had worked in a mask earlier in my career when I was first breaking into business. I was trained here in Columbia, South Carolina, by the fabulous Moolah, Lillian Ellison. And she would run shows around South Carolina to get us in a ring and get us in front of a crowd and give us some experience. And so the very first character I did was a mask character. So I'd been under a mask before and worked under it. And I adapted to it pretty quick, pretty easy, and never had a problem with it.
Did Vince McMahon have an issue with the mask and masked wrestlers in general?
Well, when I met with him, I flew up and I sat down with Vince and JR and Cornette and some other guys. But when it was just Vince and I one-on-one, and he said, look, man, we want you to work here. We want you a part of this company. He said, but I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. He said, I just don't think a masked wrestler can get over this day and age. And I said, Vince, I respect what you're saying, but I respectfully disagree. This character has been over everywhere I've been with it, whether it was Global, whether it was WCW, whether it was All Japan. I mean, it's been a popular character anywhere. And I said, I think it can get over. And he somewhat hesitantly said, okay, we're going to go with it and let's just see how this thing works out. And night after night, I kept getting these great responses from the crowd. And so I think Vince saw that, yeah, this is a character, a mass character that's over with the people. The people are behind it. They like it. So then he came up with the idea of putting Brett and I together in this America versus Canada angle, which turned out to be a hot angle.
Well, the angle was red hot at this point. I mean, the crowd in this night in Pittsburgh, and again, I still remember being there live. I mean, the place is going nuts for you. It's just a different fan base and a different level of energy than you see these days. Little known trivia fact, of course, is you're coming out to what we, most of us know as Kurt Angle's music. We got Shawn Michaels sitting ringside doing commentary. I got to ask you, what was it like between Vince and, with Shawn and Brett at this point? Did everyone know there was major heat between these two guys?
You would have been an idiot not to know it. It was, you could cut it with a knife. And of course I heard a lot about it because I'm working with Brett every night. We're working together. And so we're sitting in the same locker room and we're talking, and even away from the building, you know, we're doing things together. And so, I got to be around Brett and Owen, a lot. And, Brett wasn't shy about his dislike for not only Sean, but for the way the business was going and the way Vince was, things he was doing with the business. It was becoming more R-rated. It was becoming more edgy. And Brett didn't like that. And he didn't mind saying it. And it was as obvious as the nose on your face that he had an issue with Sean. So yeah, it was very noticeable.
Well, and I'll tell our listeners, you know, if you're watching this on mute, you gotta listen to the sound for the match, because Sean is just crushing Brett on commentary the entire match. And as you sit there and you listen, you're like, man, this guy really doesn't like Brett. I mean, it was pretty obvious that they weren't even, I mean, they were just tearing each other apart and going far beyond, you know, a good guy, bad guy feud at this point.
Yeah, there was no love lost between those guys at the time. And like I said, it was extremely obvious and noticeable, and just the way it was.
So these matches you had with Brett, are these matches where you guys would have worked this out in the back, or is he calling it in the ring? What are you doing for the match? What was it like working with Brett in terms of putting together a match?
Well, Brett, let me tell you, man, regardless of what was going on between he and Sean, Brett was a professional. Brett took his job very serious. He took his role in that company very serious. He was serious business, and I enjoyed working with Brett. And it was an easy deal for me because Brett, the style that Brett worked and the type of matches we had were very similar to what I had done in Japan. You know, they were no nonsense, just get after it matches where two guys are out there, you know, working their butt off, and nothing comical. There's, you know, no comedy spots, just serious matches. And so I was used to that. I enjoyed that. And so it was easy to work with Brett, and it was just an easy, I mean, I think we worked together very well. And I enjoyed it a bit.
Huh? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I enjoyed every bit. Did we put it together in the back? We did. We put most of it together in the back. Now, for the belt, that match, which was, I think, at a pay-per-view, we actually spent a lot of time over the phone working that one out, you know, away from the buildings. When I was at home and he would be at home, we spent many late night on the phone with each other, you know, trying to come up with something that would work for both of us.
Well, it's pretty obvious Brett took a ton of pride in his work. Man, as you're doing a shoulder block three quarters of the way around the ring, I mean, you know, for a dude your size, you were flying around. Hey, I got to ask you, because I know injuries creeped up on you not long after this. When you came to the WWF at this point, how were you health-wise? Were you pretty healthy, or were you having some issues?
No, I was having issues. I was having some major issues. It was the beginning of the end of my career. And I signed a three-year deal with Vince, and I really, honestly, I did not think I would ever fulfill the 3 years of that deal when I signed with him. And I was already dealing with some major injury problems, a right knee that's since been replaced three times, and I had torn my tricep in my right arm. I had a torn tricep, so I was on borrowed time. My body was failing me and letting me down, and I knew going in that it would be a miracle if I made it through those 3 years, and I didn't.
Now, were these football injuries, wrestling injuries, combination of everything, nagging stuff that you never took care of?
No, these were strictly wrestling injuries. And, you know, I'll go back to talking about my time in All Japan. It was the highlight of my career. I love that style, that serious, no-nonsense style. Those believable matches are a little stiffer, and they were harder on the body. And I was doing things I probably shouldn't have done. Looking back in retrospect, I mean, I remember one time sitting on a bus, you know, somewhere in Japan, and I'm talking to Stan Hansen, and Stan says, look, man, he says, that big shoulder, that flying shoulder you do every night coming off that top turnbuckle, he said, it looks good for a 290-pound guy, and you're athletic, and you can get way across the ring. He said, but I'm telling you now, he said, you're going to shorten your career if you keep doing that. He said, big guys don't need to be jumping off top turnbuckles. And sure enough, you know, there comes the nagging tricep injuries as a result of that. And it was just at my time in Japan, and I think the way I worked, the style, and the things that I did, I probably should have stayed grounded a little bit more than I did. But it all caught up with me.
So tell us about working with Vince. I mean, how was it? Are all the things you hear about him accurate? Was he what you expected him to be when you got there, or were you a little bit surprised?
No, I'd gone up and worked for Vince in the early 90s. I had met with Vince and had an opportunity to go to work for him, but I didn't. I was committed to Mr. Bob at the time in All Japan, but I went out on the road for a few weeks with the WWF back in the early 90s. And so I've been around Vince, and I found Vince to be a great guy to work for. I mean, he's, you know, he's a boss, you know that, but he's a guy that's open to ideas. He's a guy that's open to, you know, to what you think and any input that you have. And he's a fair guy. I had no issues with Vince.
When you worked those matches, were you working as the Patriot? Is that what they would have brought you in as?
No. I can't even remember. It's been so long ago.
Because that would have been 1991. So I didn't know.
I was. Yes, I was working as the Patriot. Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting on commentary. They mentioned your real name and the, you know, the South Carolina background. I thought that was just a little odd, but I think Jim Ross was just so enamored by, you know, real athletes and probably loved your pedigree as Shawn Michaels interferes here. So, you know, in this match, you know, how big of a deal was it at this time for Bret Hart to put you over?
Well, it was a big deal, I thought. I mean, I was a new guy to the company. I wasn't a new guy to the business. I wasn't a very established name and had been successful in any company that I'd worked for. But, you know, I'm the new guy on the block in the WWF. And, you know, I walk right in, and just in a matter of weeks, I'm working an angle with, you know, their top guy, their champ. And
it was shocking you won here. I mean, the place is now going nuts. You know, it was something else. I mean, he didn't lose a heck of a lot back then. So it was pretty shocking for you to win the match as a fan. I can tell you that.
Well, that's good, too. You know, to surprise the fans like that and to shock them every now and then. That's good. And, you know, going back to something you just mentioned about you know, incorporating my real name and my background athletically, you know, that was Vince's idea. He said, listen, he said, you know, let's do this. He said, I want people to know who is behind the mask. He said, I want them to know your background. They even sent a camera crew down to the house and spent a couple of days with me and, you know, interviewed me without my mask and interviewed the kids and the wife and stuff like that. And, you know, just to say, look, you know, this guy loves his country and this is why he is who he is as a wrestler and his character. But behind all that, there's a guy named Bill Wilkes that was a heck of a football player at the University of South Carolina. He's got three kids and he's got a wife and he, you know, just a regular guy. And I thought it was good to do that.
Man, it was wild seeing Brett and Sean just jawing at each other now. I mean, you could just, and maybe it's easier now because we know the history off the screen, but man, they just could not stand each other. And Undertaker coming out now. It was, you know, watching this match, I mean, gosh, the product was just so hot then. I mean, it was just every, you know, that match, so much happened so quickly. You got Shawn involved. You got Taker. Vince is still sitting at ringside. I mean, it's just wild all within a, you know, 12-minute time. Hey, do you remember who you were working house shows with at this time? Were you with Brett every night? Were you in there with, like, Owen and Davey Boy? What were you doing? Do you remember?
Well, most nights I was working with Brett. There were a few occasions when I did work Owen, or I know that that Ken Shamrock and I worked a couple of times with Owen and Davey Boy, and but most of it was with Brett. As a matter of fact, we were in Seattle, Washington, and we left and we went up the west coast of Canada, and we worked our way across Canada. Brett and I did, working with each other, and. There was literally one match, and I don't know where we were at. Maybe we were in Regina, Canada. But, you know, Brett and I are working on top. We're the last match every night. And we literally had to cut the match short because just by geography, you know, one night I'm in Seattle, Washington, and I'm the babyface and Brett's a heel. The next day we cross over into Canada and Brett's a babyface and I'm a heel. And literally one night, and I think it was Regina, we had to cut the match short and I had to have a police escort out of the building. There were five different occasions where people from the audience got into the ring or attempted to get into the ring to come after me. And Brett said, look, man, we got to get out of here. He said, you're going to get killed. So we cut the match short, and then I had the police escort me back to the hotel. But that's how much it changed going from one country to another with he and I.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a story where, you know, one night there's a wrestler that's kissing babies and signing autographs and, you know, has his thumb up and waving to the crowd. And then, you know, 24 hours later, he's getting spit on and you know, cursed at.
Oh, getting dog cussed, man, and people coming after me, getting in the ring coming after me and having to be escorted back to the hotel by the police. And when they get me back to the hotel, they escort me to my room. And I'll never forget, one of the cops said, okay, he said, our job's done. You're here. You're in your room. He said, and you need to stay in your room. He said, I strongly advise you not to leave. If you want something to eat, order room service, because we've got to go and nobody's going to be here to protect you. So you need to stay locked up in this room. But that's how intense it was with that angle we were doing.
Did you follow their advice?
Yes, sir, I did.
Yeah, I mean, that angle was well, it was something else. It was wild. And really appreciate you being here and going down memory lane with this just incredible match on Raw and so much going on in the business at the time. Hey, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
Dude, that was a fun one, man.
Yeah, it's almost a little sad, really. You know, it definitely before his time, passing away. It's one of those, like I said at the top of the show, like it's super well respected, and even, the match itself, it put on a good match. It had to be tough too. We know now the styles, of wrestling in Japan versus wrestling here in the States. And just, that would never, I feel like it would never happen nowadays where, 2 weeks ago, you're wrestling in New Japan or All Japan, and then you're on TV main eventing against Bret Hart on a Raw. It doesn't happen unless the guy is extremely well respected. People understand, who he is, what he's capable of. So it really good to hear from him. Really good to, just to have this opportunity to share this with everybody. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Let's go aftermath.
You know, jump right in. Yeah, let's do this. And so, so this is one where really a couple of weeks after this one, actually teaming with Ken Shamrock, he really teamed and kind of just kept taking on the Hart Foundation. So he was working with Ken Shamrock. They wrestled the British Bulldog and Owen Hart. Patriot actually pinned the Bulldog for the win on that one. He actually challenged Bret Hart again, as we have talked about before, for the World Heavyweight Championship at In Your House Ground Zero. Hart ended up winning that one, submitting him to the sharpshooter. But again, go back into that one in our archives, listen again. It was another great one where we had the opportunity to talk to him about that match as well too. And like we said, I felt like this match in a lot of ways was a build up to this match, this future match at Ground Zero, but had that. So one night only, took on Flash Funk, Too Cold Scorpio, beat him. You then had Bad Blood, or In Your House Bad Blood, teaming with Vader on that one against the Hart Foundation. It was Brett and the Bulldog, and they lost that one. Now, and this was one of these where, you wonder, your armchair kind of, booked this and wonder what could have happened. So he was actually supposed to be in the 1997, one of the Survivor Series 1997 teams with Vader, Goldust, and Mark Marrow, ended up being replaced by Steve Blackman because tore his tricep, which, injuries kind of plagued him at the end here, but kind of what he was dealing with. But you kind of wonder, with this one, just who, what we could have gotten type thing, you never know. It was very much in the scenario of, it was the Team Canada versus Team USA, which Team Canada winning that one is Bulldog, Neidhart, Doug Furness, and Phil LaFon. But you wonder, could something more have happened from that? You really just don't really know, kind of what could have been. And so, yeah, just kind of interesting how that one played out. But then his final TV match, it was November 1st, 1997. It was a episode of Shotgun Saturday Night, actually losing to Jim Neidhart by DQ. And so, yeah. And then he was released early 1998. And that was kind of it. Unfortunate, but obviously the time that he was there, extremely well respected, extremely well liked. And so, yeah, not a ton, had a few matches, and that was it.
Yeah. So, just a couple other things I pulled up in my research. The highest he ever was in the PWI 500 was 1991. He was 55th. His final year, 1997, he was 99.
Yep.
And was on the list for, 91 through 97.
Yeah.
Obviously heavily recruited offensive lineman, played locally in Columbia, South Carolina, and then played for the Gamecocks. He's one of only four consensus All-Americans, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So had a hell of a career. And then another thing, Jeff, I didn't know he was trained, in Fabulous Moolah's,
Was he?
Yes. And she mostly trained women wrestlers, but that's who trained him. And I did not know that. We mentioned this last time he was on the show, but he did a 2015 documentary called Behind the Mask.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one to check out. And then another thing, he did a really good interview with Steve Austin. It was two different episodes, number 232 and 278. of the old Steve Austin podcast. So definitely check that out. But yeah, man, it was really great to talk to him and appreciate him being on the show. And it was fun talking about him today.
Yeah, no. And one thing we did not, well, two things we didn't talk about yet is one, you know, in this match itself, like there was a lot of build going on with Shawn Michaels and Bret. Shawn was extremely involved in this match. He was on commentary as well during this one. And so Shawn, excuse me, a lot of selling.
Oh yeah.
For him and while kind of putting over the Patriot in a lot of ways, also working to put himself over for the eventual match with Bret. And so, you know, and kind of, you know, we're talking through that a little bit. And so we can't, you know, what, you know, talking about that, you know, the sexy boy and things like that, we can't forget to, we've made it this far. We haven't talked about Manscaped. And so just like him, we want everyone, you gotta be that summer bod, that sexy, you know, sexy boy. We want everyone to be that. We just want to remind everyone once again, you know, as it's always been, it's 20% off free shipping. We're using that code payoff on manscaped.com. Hey, Tom and I both, we know, you know, the newly released this summer, the big one they've got going, the big package they have right now, one that we would encourage everyone to get, the performance package. You know, it's got everything with the 4.0. It's got the lawnmower 4.0. That's of course just the razor that we have. Tom and I just a big fan of, absolutely, you know, wouldn't be telling you to get it if you know it wasn't worth it. It has the weed whacker, the ears, nose hair trimmer. We use that one all the time too. It's also got the deodorant, it's got the toner, you get a pair of boxers with it, you get a travel bag with it, you get all kinds of good stuff. And so the 20% off code, it absolutely makes it worth it. Pay off, use that code, 20% off, free shipping. So
the performance package for your package.
That's right. Absolutely. And so
I've been using mine more this summer just because I feel like I've gone some pool parties and stuff. So just to be able to clean off some body hair, that's been very helpful.
Well, and this week too, my buddy, I was talking to my buddies and we were making jokes just about writing jokes and about this type of stuff. And of course it's Olympic week. The Olympics kick off on Friday. So of course, like, keep your boys in gold medal form was what we came up with. And so that's one we want to make sure that everybody's got. So, all right. So with this kind of, where's the rankings? Where did Tom and I have it? So as Tom said, yes, Patriot, this was that final year. He was at 99 this year. Bret was at 20 in 1997. The kind of quick review on this one, there was no star rating on this one, but the kind of write-up on this one I did find from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And Dave, Shawn Michaels did color commentary during the Bret versus Patriot match. He was hilarious. The tension with Bret and Shawn together is tremendous because it seems like they can't even distinguish between working and shooting. Patriot pinned Bret in 9:23 with a schoolboy after a ref bump and Michaels hitting the ring and attacking Bret. Match was only so-so, but had great heat early because of Bret. You knew Patriot would win because they kept pushing too hard that he didn't have a chance to win and hadn't faced any competition of that level. They played the Canadian anthem first and the crowd booed like crazy. And McMahon kind of apologized for the behavior of the crowd subtly. Michaels in particular was making fun of the anthem. They played the U.S. anthem and Bret attacked Patriot from behind. So again, it, just playing up the America, you know, the heel invader, you know, it's worked over the years. It's struggled lately, but at this point, you know, in 1997, we were just eating it up. Like we couldn't get enough of it. So, yeah. So this one, you know, Tom, you got a score. You want me to go first? Where are you at on this?
I'll go first. And I mean, what I'm looking at is I'm looking at, you know, the crowd that night, the promo, the angle, the match, you know, the HBK stuff, you know, the match we get at Ground Zero. So like in totality, this whole little angle and stuff, I'm going to give it a 7. I really liked it. You know, I mean, it wasn't all time classic stuff, but it was really, really good pro wrestling. I enjoyed it. I wish that, I wish Patriot would have been a little healthier and had a longer run during this, but really, really enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm at a 6 on this one. I think because, like I said, it was really a stepping stone to a future match, which, you know, I know I scored a little bit higher back then. And so this is one where, yeah, I think that, you know, we were, it didn't need a lot of build. So, because obviously it was kind of a built in kind of gimmick of what was going to work. And so that, you know, made a ton of sense on that front. But yeah, I, You know, just again, it just, you know, one of those, you know, you really wonder, you know, I'm sure just a ton of knowledge. He obviously, you know, traveled the world. He worked at different promotions and, you know, one of those where he saw a lot of shit, I'm sure. And so having that, those opportunities, like, yeah, you know, it's just, you know, it's always sad. You know, unfortunately I was thinking about it. One of my drives is just like, we're in that era where we're just going to more and more of these names are going to crop up. And this is one we didn't expect. It was younger, like you said, in his late 50s or mid 50s. And, you know, some of these guys that are up there, it's unfortunate that we're going to be, you know, have to, you know, live through kind of seeing some of these, you know, these legends and greats kind of pass away and stuff like this. And so, and especially when you've got someone that's as well respected as he seemed to be, just outpouring Mick Foley, all kinds of people, like, you know, that's how it should be. And it's, you know, that's always great to see.
Yeah. Agreed.
Easy
episode, Jeff.
Yeah, quick one for us this week. It's always good, but you know, lots of wrestling happening right now. It's just Fyter Fest. We've got, you know, we're Money in the Bank was yesterday. We didn't even really talk about it. You know, Slammiversary was this weekend too. We didn't talk about it. Like, there's just so much wrestling happening right now, and we're back live too. So, you know, just all kinds of things happening in the wrestling world, and you know, so things to look forward. Well, this was a little bit of a more somber episode, just quiet episode, the you know, things to look forward to in the wrestling world.
Good. Well, fun episode. I enjoyed it. Appreciate Dell joining us when he did, and being so friendly and kind, and really great interview. So as always, thank you for joining us on The Payoff. And next week, another new episode, really good match, looking forward to it. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll see you next week on The Payoff.